This is CliffCentral.com.
Wow, busy day today. So much happening. I might have to shut up for three quarters of the show, actually. How do you like that?
Well, it might be nice for a change.
Thanks.
Something different.
It might be nice. I agree. I'm in total agreement. Oh, God. I live, there's this river that runs in front of my property, right?
Yeah.
And South Africa's rivers are so rotten and so dirty and so filthy and so polluted that I think if you dipped your small toe into the water, it would fall off and rot the rest of your body as it fell. I mean, you have no idea that I can only imagine, because I don't go down there often enough. It's just, it's whenever it rains like it did yesterday for the first time in a long time, It smells like
sewage.
Oh, way worse than sewage. It smells like sewage mixed with baby fetuses and animal parts. Mm. And I don't know what the hell comes down there, but it is unholy. It's like burnt human turds. Is there any way to describe it?
Is that the worst smell you've smelled?
Easily.
I've smelt something worse.
No.
What have you smelled that's worse? What?
I was in a car with my family, and we were driving through the Cape Flats.
Yeah.
Just trying to go fast to avoid the drive-bys.
Yeah.
And we went over a river, and I smelt the smell. And I shouted to everyone, close, quickly, roll up the windows. And
what was it?
One family member in particular took very long to roll up her window. When she finally did, she was doubled over and crying and laughing. She had actually farted. There I was saying,
stop.
Roll up the windows. I said to her, we our eyes were singed and watering. I said, you know what that was? That's what I imagine a tick fart to smell like. It was a tick fart. Worst smell ever. So is that what your river smells like?
Yeah, probably something like that. You know what the problem is? Is it just goes, it's a horrible thing to get into. But I think that our rivers are so polluted and disgusting that the water can't be used for anything. Like it has to move. And when it doesn't move, it cakes along the sides of the river, whatever it is.
Shouldn't it be clearing itself out?
You would hope so, but I think it's just so overpolluted that there's just no way for it to get better.
Oh, nothing like getting your gag reflex working first thing in the morning.
I'll tell you what, no, it was better this morning, but going to sleep last night, I was walking around my house going, there must be dog shit under my foot or something.
And it just lingers.
Yeah.
I forget to flush.
Horrible. Anyway, so, I mean, this is what we have to deal with. No one ever really talks about this because what are we going to do about it? You know, there's no Department of Water and Sanitation to speak of, since Nomvula Mokonyane basically denuded it of all of its internal and external procedures. The money's all been spent and wasted and stolen. So there isn't a Department of Water and Sanitation to take care of our rivers. And frankly, what am I going to do? Call the municipality, be one of those people, and they're going to say to me they don't know what to do?
Can't the body corporate do something about it?
No, I don't think so. Because it's only in front of us for a very short while. I mean, this river starts much, much further away, and it ends like in the sea in Maputo or whatever.
See, I'm a bit of a horror as someone who rents, because I make use of my body corporate and landlord every 2.3 seconds.
Oh, they must love you.
Yeah, they love busybody. Yes, nothing they love more than busybody, huh?
I called her the other day just to check on what brand of light bulb I must get to change my fixture in my lounge. And, you know, I thought, yeah, that's what landlords are for.
Yeah.
She hates my living guts, most likely, but oh well.
Anyway, so I thought I'd just tell you that in case you thought, you know, something smells funny. Maybe it's the river.
Maybe you've carried it in here.
Yeah, don't wash your clothes in there.
Oh, God. Wash anything in there. I'm telling you, there are diseases we don't even know about yet that are living in there.
When I was much younger and Swaziland was the place to be in terms of visiting and gambling and hotels and spas.
Yeah.
I was at a spa swimming pool, an outdoor pool, and the sign said, please don't wash your groceries in the swimming pool.
What?
That was an actual thing?
Very confusing. Wow. When someone's there with their tin of sweet corn washing it.
You're rinsing your tomatoes before you make a salad, yes. Oh.
Gross.
Couple of emails that we didn't get to yesterday. So can I get into those or do you have an agenda?
Let me check. No, you can go.
Okay. By the way, a little later on this morning, we'll be doing the first of a number of features that we are doing with PigSpotter. PigSpotter, of course, well known to anybody who has been on social media. PigSpotter started off as a community activist of a kind, called himself PigSpotter, which didn't make him very popular with the police. But the fact is, this guy was out there trying to give people information that was relevant from a traffic point of view, trying to help people to figure out their way, not around the law, but certainly their way of complying with the law and causing minimum fuss in their lives. And PigSpotter has been a regular fixture on South African social media for a very long time. He's made, I think, quite an interesting contribution to South Africa from the point of citizen activism.
And also he's evolved.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a guest he's bringing on this morning for the first feature in four that we'll be doing on smart driving. He's bringing in a guy who we've had on before on cliffcentral.com, Howard Dembowski, who really is the guy when it comes to knowing what your rights are, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, what the current status of this ARTO Act is. It's about to be signed into law. What's coming with that? And Howard Dembowski is absolutely the right guy to talk to there too. So we'll speak to him. He's the chairman of the Justice Project of South Africa. So that's coming up.
You know, if you had to just judge someone by their name, Howard Dembowski is someone to call.
Oh, yeah.
You want Howard fighting for your justice.
When you're in a pickle, then that's the name you need. But this morning, he's happy to share his advice and his knowledge of South African traffic law and road safety with all of us. So that's going to be fun. That's happening around 6:35 this morning. We'll also be doing Blind History a little later and an interesting guest popping by. We've had her before. Crystal Kay from The Real Housewives of Johannesburg will be hanging out with us after 7 o'clock this morning, which should be loads of fun.
She's always a hoot.
Yes.
Always.
Blind History today is Ramses II, Pharaoh of the New Kingdom of Egypt. And we're going to give you a little insight into his life. Do you want to hear more about that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. In today's episode of Blind History, he was more of an egomaniac than Trump. Stronger than Arnold, more God than man.
Ooh.
Okay, maybe not stronger than Arnold, but all the others, definitely. Stretch your understanding to all the way back 2,000 years, right? To the time of Jesus and Augustus. Now go back another 1,300 years. That's how long ago he was the pharaoh of ancient Egypt. If you can even imagine such a vast expanse of history, then you might be able to see more than ruins, stones, and statues in the reign of the great pharaoh Ramses II. Of ancient Egypt. You can get to cliffcentral.com today for a new episode of Blind History, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All right, emails.
Yes.
I missed you guys. I was in dire need of my fix that I downloaded the Mark Bank Chinese cat interview and beamed all the way through it. It's hilarious. I share it multiple times. They loved it. Reshared it. You're welcome. Mark Banks was in here a while ago, and he brought that gold cat there.
That's, the Chinese lucky cat.
Yeah.
But that now has some duct tape on it as well.
Yeah, it's got a broken arm. It was just embarrassing. I don't know where he got it, but we've held on to it as some kind of relic.
And his arm is no longer moving.
No. So does that mean, like, it's a bad omen now?
I don't know. Yeah. Look, I mean, Mark Banks, he was hilarious in that show. I don't think I said more than three words. He just talked. It was fantastic. So that's from Caro. She says, any way of finding out if I'm the only one in Newfoundland in Canada that religiously downloads you on the daily? I would love to discover some kindred spirits. I can look into that. I know we have a breakdown of where in the world people listen to us, but I don't know if it's easy enough to go in and find
that exact person.
That exact place. Like, I'm not sure how granular it is. I know we can get, possibly in South Africa, we can get to cities. So I don't see why it shouldn't work for Newfoundland in Canada.
Hmm.
Let me see what I can do there.
Oh, so I'll start that, like a support group.
Well, imagine if Caro has like five neighbors who are also listening to us and none of them know this.
Yeah.
They can actually sit together and listen or
like,
actually
like
meet.
Have a bachelorette party.
Yeah, have a drink or something, you know. And then this one is listener email number 2346.
Oh, yes. To note that down.
You numbered them, Sia. That's very nice of you.
Yeah, this one's, to keep track of
this
these
is
things.
From, this is from Heidi. She says, I am struggling with a severe case of adolescent delinquentism. Going back to last week's podcast regarding shitty parents, as a result of supposed adults slash shitty parents not taking responsibility for their actions, thanks ANC for setting such a great example, my 17-year-old sister has come to stay with me and my boyfriend.
Uh-oh.
Since the schools broke up for holidays on Friday, she was rewarded with this freedom by going to a party, sleeping over, and then spending some time with a friend the next day while we ran some errands. She ended up losing her phone, and in the process of trying to track her down, we discovered that she was not with the said friend and was in fact with her shitbag ex-boyfriend.
Mm.
This boy had broken up with her, citing that her life contained too much drama, and subsequently started dating her best friend about 2 weeks later.
Mm.
Now, punishment has been handed out for her dishonesty, but my question is, what does one do with this delusional teenager that thinks this horrible human being is the one for her and won't treat her like crap?
Oh.
Any advice would be highly appreciated. We've even considered the option of burning her at the stake. Thanks, guys. Peace and love. Heidi.
I was going to go with that first.
Yeah, that was going to be Leanne's first stop of advice, but I don't think you're allowed to burn people at the stake anymore.
Well, now that it's been said aloud, it can't be done because, you know. So my advice, seeing as I'm the relationship expert.
You go ahead, Leanne Moll. You give the advice.
From
that
my
I know
string
you
of successful relationships,
mm-hmm.
I can see myself in her. And I don't think there's anything you can do. You've got to let it ride out.
Really? There's nothing?
She has to learn her lesson.
Mm. Oof.
Even if it takes another 3 years.
Really? Nothing you can do?
No, I don't think so.
And especially at that age. Listen, she's 17.
Because you will always be seen as the person who took her away from him. She needs to see herself as the person who took herself away from him. And the only way she's going to do that is when it gets really bad and she has to leave.
Let me reiterate, though, that there are a couple of arguments you can make if she's in a reasonable state of mind.
Yeah.
Who's the she? The
17-year-old. Okay,
the 17-year-old.
This dude. Now, first of all, there is no greater betrayal than to start dating your friend's
or someone who's cheated
boyfriend,
on
boyfriend, girlfriend, or your friend
not
after
cheated,
you've broken up
yeah.
with someone. It's just, that is, it's so low. When you do that, if you start dating someone's best friend after you've broken up with them, you are just a shitbag, precisely as you describe it. There are no worse people. There are no people closer to the ground than a snake, than those people.
Mm.
And they are just the worst, and they have no interest in making you happy. It is a complete and utter betrayal. There's no room, wiggle room on the side for these guys. And for this dude, if that's what he did, I don't know what other things about his personality and character might make him such an awful human being. But that one alone tells me enough about him to know that this is not the kind of guy that you should be dealing with. That's all I got to say. I don't know what to advise either. I'm not a parent. I have no idea of how to have a successful relationship.
Oh.
But I would say if someone treated you like this, you would run a mile.
Right.
Or you should run a mile.
Well, that would be a good thing to say to her. But I don't know if you can prevent her.
See, I would say just if it's no harm to her, just let her be. She needs to fall flat, burn herself, cut off an arm, and learn the hard way. Because I come from a school of not shitty parents, but my parents really did some extreme things to prove points to us. I think I've told the story once before, but my parents were getting annoyed at my two older sisters who wanted to go out. They're like, oh my gosh, there's a party happening. And my parents are like, no, stay at home. They're like, no, can you please take us to this party happening? And they're just like conning on and on and on. And until my dad got really annoyed and was like, fine, get into the car. We're going. I'll drop you off. And instead of driving to this house where this party was happening, my dad just casually drove to the graveyard and dropped my sisters off at my grandmother's tombstone and said, this is what I mean. Just stay at home and focus on your family. And he drove off for a couple of hours. He came back like 2.5 hours, 3 hours later.
And left them.
That's very extreme.
He was like, now, where are your priorities?
Now burning at the stake seems like nothing.
Jesus, leave them alone in the graveyard.
That's not, oh, come on. It was in the afternoon.
It's hilarious.
They didn't die. It wasn't harmful to them, but they learned their lesson. So hang this on. 17-year-old.
Barbara Streisand's on the line.
Oh.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Sure, you've been quite vocal lately.
Yes. See, but did your sister die? Did they?
Barbara, no, they did not. That is the point.
By the way, she's been making groveling apologies. Jesus. Oh, yesterday, Barbara Streisand was all over social media. Remember what happened was Michael Jackson, obviously this Leaving Neverland documentary's come out. Michael Jackson's looking more and more like he was a child molester from the beginning, and everybody knew this, and you're hearing all these horrible stories. So Barbara says a couple of days ago, ah, please, these kids, they were okay. They had a good life.
Toughen up.
Toughen up. There's nothing wrong here. Stop
why,
it.
Why did she do that?
What's a little pinky where you don't want it?
Yeah. So everybody climbed into Barbara, right? Now she's saying, oh, no, I have nothing but sympathy for these people who were abused. And poor Wade Robson and Jimmy, whatever his name is. And this is so unfortunate, and she cannot say enough how sorry she is.
After you brought it up yesterday, I went and did some more research on Barbara, and I realized she's 76 years old now. So she's reaching that age where somehow there's no filter between your brain and what comes out of your mouth.
Barbara was the one who said that
she doesn't care.
She said once that if George W. Bush won the election against, I think the Democrat at the time must have been John Kerry, she was going to leave the United States and moved to Canada. That was what Barbara said.
See?
And when George W. Bush won, she didn't up and sell everything and move. She's also the lunatic who started what they call the Barbara Streisand effect, unwittingly.
What's the Barbara Streisand effect?
It's this thing that happens when people who aren't yet the focus of a big story or an issue or a social media meme or a viral trend do something to make themselves that without trying to do that. So Barbara Streisand, there was this person who was busy taking pictures of Malibu to show how the ocean was busy eating away at the coast. And they happened to have taken a picture of Barbara Streisand's house for an article. It was a little known article. No one would have seen the picture. And she should have known that there was Google Earth already. Anyway, Barbara sued this photographer. They had to take down the picture. But as a result of that, everybody went online and started finding pictures of Barbara Streisand's house, and people started flying helicopters over, and it became a big thing.
Goodness.
So instead of just having this tiny story that no one would have seen, the whole game became, let's find ways to irritate Barbara Streisand. And it became a massive, massive thing. And these days when something gets out of control, it's called the Streisand effect.
Okay.
When you cause something to become a much bigger issue than it should be, without actually trying to cause it.
How frustrating.
Yeah. So there's a great moniker for her to have for something that she's done. All right. While we're talking about US politics, just quickly, I've kind of ignored a lot of this stuff, but there's some big news this week in the Mueller investigation.
Sure.
Which, by the way, everybody on the left and people in the mainstream media have been saying for 2 years this has been going on. They've been saying Donald Trump is definitely guilty of collusion with Russia. Just wait for the Mueller report to come out and you'll see. Well, it came out. Nothing. Zero. The Attorney General of the United States of America has released a sort of covering letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee in which he says, guys, I've gone through this Mueller report. You are welcome to look through it yourselves in good time. But here are the headlines. There is no Russian collusion. Now, for the last 2 years, all you've heard from Democrats, including presidential candidates, all you've heard from CNN, MSNBC, The Washington Post, The New York Times, Bill Maher, and loads of other people in left-wing media is how Donald Trump is definitely in cahoots with Russia. He's a bad orange man, bad. he's going to be he's evil. He's nefarious. His children are involved. He's going to go to jail. You've heard people saying, the noose is tightening. You've heard them saying, there is indictment imminent. They've been saying, jail time for Trump. He won't finish his term. All of it. Totally manufactured bullshit.
Fake news.
Now, there's a guy who writes for Rolling Stone magazine, Matt Taibbi. He's not my favorite journalist. He's written some real hit pieces and some terrible, scoundrel, gutter journalist stuff. But he made the point in this week's Rolling Stone that basically this whole Mueller investigation thing is the mainstream media in America's moment of self-destruction. It's their weapon of mass destruction moment. You know, when George W. Bush and his Colin Powell went to the UN and lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and it made a lot of people go, well, why are we invading them?
Mm-hmm.
Basically removed the credibility from that administration. Well, this is the final nail in the coffin of a media machine that is so biased and so obsessed with Donald Trump that it is now pertinent and clear and obvious to everybody who's interested that they were pursuing their own narrative with no regard for the facts, and that now that they've been shown to be completely wrong about everything, and their credibility is dashed against the rocks. Now that it is the story's over for the media. It's finished. And their arch enemy, the evil Donald Trump, seems to actually have clean hands in this Russia situation. This appears to me to be the final death knell of a media machine that needs to be put out to pasture.
Kedile. Finished.
It's done. I mean, I don't understand how much more left-wingers and Democrats could possibly have to say. And what does Trump say? I mean, he's been tweeting up a storm about how it's a witch hunt and all these things. But did he break any laws? Not according to the Attorney General and not according to Robert Mueller. So President Trump was asked in a meeting. He was with Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel at the White House, and he was asked about the Mueller report. This is what he had to say. And then we'll get on with the rest of the show this morning. But listen.
It's lasted a long time. We're glad it's over. It's 100% the way it should have been. I wish it could have gone a lot sooner, a lot quicker. There are a lot of people out there that have done some very, very evil things, very bad things. I would say treasonous things against our country. And hopefully that people that have done such harm to our country, we've gone through a period of really bad things happening. Those people will certainly be looked at. I've been looking at them for a long time, and I'm saying, why haven't they been looked at? They lied to Congress. Many of them, you know who they are. They've done so many evil things.
And he's talking here also about high-level intelligence people in the United States. Comey and who were the other? The CIA head, I can't remember his name now, name escapes me. But basically these guys who were high up in the intelligence organization, CIA, FBI, who were saying, oh no, Trump's definitely going down. And clearly, they were wrong.
Is it Gina?
Mm-mm. No, I'll remember it just now.
I will tell you, I love this country. I love this country as much as I can love anything. My family, my country, my God. But what they did, it was a false narrative. It was a terrible thing. We can never let this happen to another president again. I can tell you that. I say it very strongly. Very few people I know could have handled it. We can never, ever let this happen to another president again. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So the guy's whose name I was thinking of is Brennan. He was the head of the CIA for a time. Anyway, I mean, here's Trump. Now, you know, I've said from the beginning, not all of us, but I've said from the beginning, he's an objectionable man. He's an egomaniac. He's not everybody's favorite person. And he doesn't care what you think of him. And for a lot of people, those are bad enough reasons for him to be, in some way, through some magic, thrown out of office, which isn't going to happen, by the way. And now that this report is out, this Russia hoax, which is what he's called it for the longest time, has to be put to bed. And it's time for the Democrats to find themselves some really good reasons, some compelling reasons, why a country that is thriving under this president, where jobs are up, the economy is booming, people in minority communities are doing better than they've ever done in terms of their participation in the economy. All of these people on the left have got to realize that the thing that they've always said they were good at is something Trump's better at. And everything that he's promised, including this wall that he says he's still going to build, he's getting done. So I don't know whether you've got to confront, you look in your mirror if you're a Democrat in America or in the mainstream media, you look in the mirror and you go, it's me, I'm the problem. And you have the humility to realize that and to let this president get on with what he's doing, because he's put up with this for 2 years. Or whether you're going to carry on going at him, try to find some other reason why someone who you just don't like needs to suddenly be set upon by new nonsense.
That's the problem, is that he's not likable.
Of course not.
But if you look at exactly what he's doing and you check it off on a checklist.
Well, one of my favorite quotes that I've read in the beginning of Trump's presidency was a journalist who wrote, "Do you like the pilot of the plane you're on?"
Yeah, you don't have
you
to.
You don't walk in and you That's say, "Let me see how you are. Do you like vanilla or chocolate? Do you like bananas or oranges?
Right.
Do they do the job?" If the answer is yes, then you sit down and you move on.
Shut up. Right. So here's Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying this is a complete exoneration. Listen to this quickly.
Well, I frankly disagree with you, and so does the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General. The report found that they were unable to make a decision that went over to the Department of Justice, where they did make a decision. The Attorney General followed the legal process. He worked with the Deputy Attorney General, who's been involved since the very beginning of this two-year absurdity, and they made a decision that there was no obstruction. So that makes it a complete and total exoneration. I don't know any other way to look at it when the whole purpose of this investigation was to determine whether or not there was collusion. The president's spoken on this already.
All right, so there we go. We'll put that to bed. But I thought it was worthy of remarks because it's something we've talked about for the longest time. And this was the big clangor. This was the bombshell that the Democrats were hoping would scupper this presidency. Clearly not. So speaking of bombshells, have you ever considered the cost of a cancer journey? Now, I mean, this is probably not something that you've thought about until it actually hits. And then when it does, you suddenly go, oh my God.
As in the monetary cost?
Yeah. Oof. How do you ensure that you have the right cover for future health and financial needs? Well, understanding the impact of cancer on your life, your career, your ability to work and earn an income, it's all in the next episode of our Understanding Cancer podcast series, which is hosted by Sonia Booth. You may have been listening to this already over the last few episodes.
Booth,
that's right. 9 a.m. today, we look at cancer and your financial wellness. And remember, all 10 episodes are available on cliffcentral.com, on the Cliff Central app, or wherever you get your podcasts. So if you know someone who's going through this, get hold of them and show them how to get this podcast series.
I actually listened to a few episodes of that.
Yes.
And it's just put together so well and so simply. And it's such a great tool to share with people who are going through this journey and family members who are going through it. It's just well constructed and starts with the basics and ends with what you need to know at the end.
Well, that I think that, you know, for anyone who's going through this, you sometimes feel so alone.
Yeah,
and there's absolutely no one to talk to, and you get, 15 minutes with your doctor?
And also you can Google stuff, but it's just going to make you so anxious.
So rather listen to the experts, and really there are experts on all levels that can help you with this journey. All right, couple of news stories. We've got a lot to get to today. So first of all, I'd like to express condolences to the leader of the Inkatha Freedom Party, Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi, over the death of his wife. The IFP paid homage to the late Princess Irene Audrey Tandekile Buthelezi, the wife of the leader Mangosuthu Buthelezi, describing her as a freedom fighter who also led the IFP's women-driven economic program of self-reliance. You know, they were married since the 1930s, I think it was. They had five kids together. 70 years, apparently, they'd been married. She'd been a pillar of strength to him. I interviewed him last week on Friday.
Yeah.
And she died on Sunday.
Had he mentioned that she'd been ill?
Mm-mm. But we spoke. Sorry, she died on Monday. We spoke about her and I said, you know, tell me about the role she's played in your life. And the interview will come out this week, so you'll be able to hear it in your, you know, for yourself. Fact is, this is one of the few politicians in this country who had one wife. They stayed married throughout.
Yeah.
Seemingly a very happy marriage. She was a source of great support to him. He was a great support to her. It's a beautiful story. And I don't think we make enough fuss over ordinary, happy marriages and people who look for the stuff that makes social fabric weave together.
It's so rare. So rare.
So condolences to the Buthelezi family over the death of Princess Irene. And obviously we'll play out that interview with Mangosuthu Buthelezi, who himself is 90 years old this year. He'd been in charge of the IFP since its foundation. All right. Ethiopian Airlines says pilots got the appropriate training in that plane that went down. Apparently, the pilots that flew the plane that crashed on March the 10th had trained on all appropriate simulators, rejecting reports that they had not been adequately prepared to handle the new aircraft. There is speculation that the software could have contributed to the crash, which killed 157 people, as well as to the crash of another Boeing 737 MAX, a Lion Air flight in October. Regulators say both planes had similar erratic flight paths shortly after takeoff, an important part of the decision to ground roughly 370 MAX planes around the world. So in case you were worried about that, that's the latest we have on the Ethiopian plane that went down. Eskom, God bless them, Eskom have got a price hike that is going to cost South Africa 90,000 mining jobs. That's according to the Mines Council. Labor unions have threatened strikes over the job cuts at mining firms, as well as planned reductions at numerous state-owned companies. Well, I hate to point out the obvious, especially to the socialists in South Africa who still think that that's the greatest way to run things. But there's always going to be a cost for stupidity and for incompetent and corrupt government. And now that cost is going to start hitting ordinary people.
There's an actual price tag to it.
Yeah, I love the way the unions don't particularly care that taxpayers have to foot the bill for all of this disaster. But suddenly when it hits home and talk of jobs comes about, then the unions sit up and take notice and go, oh, we've got to do something about this. They seem to think it's perfectly okay for Eskom, for example, to keep tons of people in Eskom who are basically in sheltered employment. And now that it's hitting the mining sector, we may just hear some more noise from the unions. South Africa's gold and platinum mines will shed 90,000 jobs in the next 3 years as above-inflation electricity price increases by the power utility Eskom add to already soaring operational costs. Mm. Did you think it would go differently? How do you think business works? If your costs outweigh your profits, you have to shut down, fire, cost cut. This is how it works. It's not rocket science. Someone in the unions is going to sit down and do an economics exam at some point, or at least be shown the difference between plus and minus. And I don't think that's asking too much. Jesus. So that's an ugly story, but it's the reality. This is what happens when Eskom is the disaster it is because of state capture and blah, blah, blah. Cape Town. Week 3 of Rob Packham's murder trial, the Western Cape High Court. A police cell phone data analyst has taken the witness stand. So the Constantia businessman is on trial for the murder of his wife, Jill Packham, last February. Remember we spoke about how all these rich guys in Cape Town are killing their wives rather than just divorcing them and giving them half their money.
Yeah, it could be a lot easier.
Really? Do we need the violence? So apparently making reference to a timeline he's compiled. Reese Harvey, that's the cell phone mapping expert, has testified that his job was to analyze phone calls between the accused and Packham, and one of the couple's daughters and the slain wife's place of work. So that story continues, and we'll keep an eye on that as it happens. Judge Zondo, I saw him on TV last night, is to reach out to the Free State government after Kgalisi Dukwana's testimony was delayed. So he's basically gone to whatever authority he needs to go to, the Supreme Court, and said he needs an extension for the State Commission investigation. He said basically he needs more time. They've given him until December. He should have all the oral evidence done by December, and then he can start compiling his report, ideally. But the former Free State MEC, Mkolisi Dukwana, said that he was promised 2 million rand a month for agreeing to put the Guptas in charge of a construction project.
It's a nice package.
It's not bad. He did not testify at the state capture inquiry on Monday due to difficulties obtaining information from the provincial government. So there's obviously skullduggery going on there. Former MEC said he was promised $2 million a month if he helped the Guptas run a certain construction project, and the Deputy Chief Justice, who's also the head of the commission, Raymond Zonda, said the commission will reach out to the Free State government, who've probably burnt a whole lot of the information.
It's gone.
Yeah, but let's see what happens. All right, those are the five things you need to know today.
Very good.
So let's get you some useful info. I always like having the experts in the studio to help all of us who don't know a damn thing and who need to know more about how and where and when the law applies to us, what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing. Smart Driving is going to be a four-part series, which we will be bringing you. And it's hosted by our friend Pig Spotter, Cliff, who's here with us this morning. For a long time, people thought we were the same person.
Indeed.
And yeah. I saw you put up some some social media stuff to that effect. Yeah. I only met you like everybody else did through Twitter. And for a long while, nobody knew who you were.
Sure. Yeah. We had this this common identity with us, my name and your surname.
That's
everyone,
right.
Everyone seemed to believe we were the same person.
And yeah. And what was great about it is that you were one of the first proper citizen activists when it came to the roads, the police, the metro cops.
Yeah.
Letting people know what their rights were, occasionally causing a little bit of trouble and a little bit of noise somewhere.
Occasionally.
Occasionally. But you've evolved too, and you've become one of those people who has enormous credibility when it comes to talking about these things.
Sure.
And for that, I mean, we've got to all say congratulations, because people don't know what their rights are.
Absolutely.
People don't know what the rules of the road are. People kind of drive as they want to, and that's why in South Africa we've got such chaos on our roads.
Absolutely. Which also blows my mind. I mean, because we have people like Howard, who's actually sitting to the left of me, who, I mean, they've been advocates of what's the right thing to do, what's the wrong thing to do. And he's been in it for years as well. And, you know,
Howard, by the way, Howard has never done anything wrong in his life, which
never.
Is an extraordinary thing. So I'll introduce.
I wish that was true.
I don't know. You're probably the only person who could claim to get close to it. But yeah. Road safety is something that we should always keep in sharp focus. Every time you take to the roads, you're not only responsible for yourself and those in the vehicle with you, but for everyone. And if you can say that you're in the know, and that you actually understand everything there is to know about road safety, well, good for you. Most of us don't. And today we'll introduce Smart Driving with Pig Spotter, our new four-part series, focusing on road safety, your rights, practical information, consumer advice, just for you. So each week, Smart Driving will interview experts and professionals in the fields of law, emergency response, road safety. And among those will be the co-host of this segment, who I've just introduced to you now, Cliff Pig Spotter Pinto, one of South Africa's best known and most trusted online personalities when it comes to road use and driving. And Howard Dembowski is here with us this morning, the chairman of the Justice Project South Africa. Howard has really been around in terms of road safety, in terms of the rules of the road, for a very long time. And as Cliff said just now, as Pig Spotter said, this is the guy who knows all the rules. He's excited to come on board and impart his knowledge, because the Auto Bill is about to be passed. This is the big news, right, Howard?
Yeah, well, it has been passed, actually.
It has. Has it been signed by the president?
On the 5th of March, it was passed by the National Assembly. The president hasn't signed it into law yet.
Okay.
And hopefully he will delay doing so or fail to do so completely if he actually bothers to consult proper legal counsel on this matter, because the Auto Amendment Bill has got to be the most unconstitutional legislation that's ever, ever hit this country. And when I say it's unconstitutional, when we get into the nitty-gritty of it, Cliff, I promise you, you're going to fall off that chair, because
I'm ready.
We all know this innocent until proven guilty concept. It's not something that's foreign to South Africa. It's contained in Section 35(3) of our Constitution.
Yeah.
And the Auto Act is the exact opposite.
They assume you're guilty until proven innocent?
You are guilty, full stop, in terms of the Auto Amendment Bill. There is no such thing as proven innocent, because the Amendment Bill takes away your right to elect to be tried in court. You may no longer do that. You must make a written representation to a representations officer who is employed by something called the Road Traffic Infringement Authority, as it's to be renamed. That person and that entity
makes its money out of traffic fines. So you're making a representation to a person whose salary is dependent.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're unsuccessful with that, then in its infinite wisdom, our legislators have come up with a new part-time tribunal comprising of 9 people that will listen to your appeal based on the representation that you made in the first place. But they'll only do so if you apply to do that within 30 days and your application is accompanied by a fee to be prescribed by the minister. Whenever legislation says that, watch out, because it doesn't have to go before Parliament. They can do what happened last year with our license transaction fees. They were increased last year, I don't know if you noticed, from 42 Rand per licensing transaction to 72 Rand per...
almost double.
Well, that's right. It was a 71.43% increase. And the minister just did it, plain and simple. So whenever it's a fee to be prescribed by the minister, watch out. Because what's to stop the Minister of Transport saying that the fee to make your application to this tribunal for an appeal is 3 times the fine amount.
Mm.
Nothing's to stop him from doing that. And yes, I know that that sounds like a conspiracy theory or whatever, but do you trust our Minister of Transport?
So Howard, first of all, it sounds like executive overreach. It sounds like unconstitutionality. But obviously all of this has to be then tested by the courts if this does actually get signed into law. I mean, if the president is able to halt this and say, look, there are big problems here, which is what his job is.
Correct.
When it comes to signing something like this. Mm. If he nonetheless just goes in guns blazing and says, fine, we're going to go with this Arthur Amendment Bill, then it can be tested in court.
Yes, absolutely. And look, not a lot of people know this, but I already have a constitutionality challenge in the High Court. It's been going since April last year, and it's taken my opponents 10 months to give me their answering affidavits.
Are those opponents the Department of Transport?
The Department of Transport, it's the Minister of Transport, it's the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, it's the Minister of Justice. There are actually 17 respondents in this particular matter.
Talk about collective responsibility.
And trust me, the Auto Amendment Bill makes things worse. It doesn't make things better. And I'm talking about the current Auto Act already presumes you to be guilty until you prove yourself innocent, but the amendment bill takes that right to prove yourself innocent away from you. Because I don't know how many people understand review and appeal, but you cannot introduce new evidence in an appeal or in a review. So what you write in your written representation is what you've got to stick to in those processes. And then to make it even worse, if you're not happy with what the tribunal says, then you've got to make an application within 30 days as well to the magistrate's court to hear a review. And this is the first time in recorded history that magistrate's courts will start to preside over review matters. It's absolutely bizarre. This is normally a function of the High Court. And the problem with that is that people like me and others objected to the idea that you had to approach the High Court, because who's got $2 million for a review application?
You have to have senior counsel. You have to...
Exactly.
There's a whole lot. So, Howard, let me ask you the first of all, this Arthur Amendment Bill is meant to make things, as I understood it, in its original, the idea that came about was that it would be a demerit system where we'd all carry on with the rules of the road that we already know are in existence, and it would hopefully make people behave better, drive better, because you get demerits eventually, you'd lose your license, you could end up in jail, all kinds of bad things if you kept losing points. And
sure. Yeah, 12 points. Yeah.
I mean, is that what you understood?
Absolutely. Then your license will be suspended as well.
Yeah.
After 12 points, and then pending review and 3 months. And
but that's not the thrust of this at all. You're saying that this is actually almost turning the entire justice system on its head just for traffic infringements. And precisely. By the way, do we have any idea of how well enforcement is already carried out?
Yeah, we do, actually.
Very badly.
Exceptionally badly. I couldn't believe it when I read an answering affidavit to my current constitutional challenge that the registrar of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency actually had the audacity to say that they have contributed to the reduction in road fatalities that have happened over the past 10 years and to the tremendous improvement in obeying rules of the road and road traffic laws that's occurred in that particular time. Look, I don't know what planet this man drives on, but he doesn't he doesn't drive on planet Johannesburg.
Definitely not.
That's one thing for sure, because I have never seen people behaving so badly as I've seen getting progressively worse over the years, especially since the ARTA Act's been enforced. Now, let's be fair about it. It's been enforced for the last going on 11 years now. But the points demerit system hasn't. No. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we can't say that the points demerit system has had no effect, because it doesn't apply yet.
Mm.
But the points demerit system is the smallest part of the ARTA Act, and trust me, I'm not for one second saying a points demerit system is a bad idea. It's a good idea in your overall arsenal of tools that you can use to bring about road safety. However, it is not the golden bullet. And in order for a system like that to work, all of your traffic cops need to be in possession with electronic devices to check the validity of your driving license, because I ask you with tears in my eyes when last anyone in the studio was stopped by a traffic cop and they did anything other than look at their license and say, thank you, you can go. When last did that traffic officer take that and check it against a computer or a different device?
I actually had mine done couple of weeks ago. I was driving home one night around 7 o'clock, and they did. They went and checked for fines and everything else.
At roadblocks. No. I'm talking about traffic cops standing at the side of the road, Gareth.
Obviously.
Because in order for a points demerit system to actually work, every single traffic officer needs to be connected to the eNATIS database, because your driving license doesn't say on it, this thing's suspended because this oak's been driving like a bit of a prick for the last 10 years.
Howard, isn't it true also that with all of these laws and all of this bureaucracy and all of these new bodies that are going to be created to enforce the ARTA Amendment Bill and all kinds of other things, all that's going to happen is that the people who are compliant, who actually get their licenses renewed, who make sure that they pay their fines, those people are just going to be hit harder. And the people who want to break the rules by not having a license at all, by bribing a metro policeman, by doing whatever they want on the road, probably driving something that's not even roadworthy, nothing happens to those people.
Well, yeah, look, that is the public perception. And I just want to put something very straight here, because even judges think that they are law-abiding citizens because they pay their traffic fines. Well, sorry to burst your little bubble, but I'm a law-abiding citizen because I don't get traffic fines in the first place. Yeah. And that has got to be the objective, is to get to a situation where there is voluntary compliance. But the ARTA Amendment Bill is a lot more dangerous than you think it is.
Yeah.
Okay?
Absolutely.
I'd like to ask you, Gareth, mm-hmm. do you pay e-tolls?
Hell no.
Aha. Sorry.
Leanne.
She does.
I've got a device.
Sell out.
I used to pay them.
Yeah.
I don't anymore.
Okay. I know that my good friend the pig spotter here.
Whose side are you on, Howard?
Would die.
You said to her that she's a sellout, and you tell me that I'm a bad person.
No,
so which is
hell no? No, you're not a bad person, because e-tolls, let's face it, everybody has taken a stance on this thing. 30% of people are paying e-tolls. Now, let me really burst your bubble. The ARTA Amendment Bill takes the service of documents and transforms them into something called electronic service. Mm-hmm. And that is defined as any electronic means in the Otto Amendment.
So they could send you an SMS.
Facebook, WhatsApp, anything. Instagram, email, you name it.
And all of that constitutes legal delivery.
Correct. Every single one of them constitutes legal service, not even delivery. Okay.
Yeah, but we're talking about a government that can't even keep the lights on.
Wait, it gets better. Wait, it gets better. If you think that this is a poo-poo, hey, it's nothing.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is that up to date, our friends at SANRAL have not prosecuted a single person for non-payment of e-tolls? Yes, there was one big court case with Dr. Stoichev, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. The guy who ran around with three different sets of number plates in his vehicle and kept on changing them around. Well, that guy was a criminal, obviously. That was number plate fraud. But there hasn't been the mass prosecution that was threatened by the likes of Vusi Mona and Nazir Ali right in the beginning.
Why?
Okay. Because currently the Otto Act requires that registered mail, in other words, the registered letter service, and this is an argument I'm having at the moment, is used to serve Otto documents on you. But there's another problem, and that is that the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project, the e-toll roads, goes through two jurisdictions. When I say two jurisdictions, in one, the Otto Act applies. In the other, the Criminal Procedure Act applies. And that other is Ekurhuleni.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that means that they'd have to split these things up. They'd have to use registered mail to send you infringement notices, etc. The second the Otto Amendment Bill is signed into law, then our pals at SANRAL can automate sending off electronic infringement notices to you and you and you and everybody else. And guess what? The fine is 250 Rand per gantry that you travel under and do not pay your e-toll.
Yeah, but
for.
They're never going to recover that money from all of us.
Oh, well.
No, how are they going to do that?
Let me explain.
Take
it
away
to you.
All our licenses?
Yes.
Everyone's license.
Yes. Have you heard
then
of
no one will care about the licenses.
Well, I wouldn't count on that because
people,
I can
civil,
tell you.
Civil disobedience in a massive way.
Cliff? Sorry, Gareth.
Cliff's sitting over there.
Yes. Maybe. Maybe. Maybe it will trigger another tax revolt. That is something that cannot be discounted. But right now, enforcement orders in terms of the Otto Act exist. And I can tell you now that an enforcement order prevents you from renewing your driving license card, your vehicle license disc, and your professional driving permit. And I can tell you what the effect is right now on people that these are issued against. They go and they pay those enforcement orders. And the reason that they do it is that nothing terrifies them more than the idea or the concept of being arrested by a traffic officer for driving on an expired driving license card. Even though arrest is not prescribed in the law, they get threatened with it. And I can tell you, this is something that we've observed over at least a half a decade now since enforcement orders have been getting used in mass. And I'm telling you now that the effect... And you can mark my words on this, Gareth.
I'm listening to you. I'm writing down notes. What are you talking about? Put the fear
you
of God into
me.
Yeah.
If you get a fine of 250 Rand per gantry and you travel under two gantries in one direction and one in the other going to and from home, and I'm talking about you very privileged people that live very close to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
The rest
I'm not talking about the people who live in Durangon, who have to drive under 10 of these things. $750 a day.
It's ridiculous.
Are you going to be able to afford that?
No one can.
You're going to go and get an e-tag and you're going to pay e-tolls. That's what's going to happen. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out. That is why, sir, we have not had SANRAL and national government turn around and say, let's scrap this thing, it's not working.
Because they're waiting.
They have an end game in store. And if you think Cyril Ramaphosa is not going to sign this Otto Amendment Bill into law because he's going to listen to proper legal advisors who say this is unconstitutional, Well, I'm sorry, but I don't have the same view as you.
All right, so now you've frightened us.
Yeah, I'm off to go and pay the rest of my, outstanding bills.
You see, that's the exact
reaction, yeah.
That is the exact reaction. And you know what, Gareth, the interesting part of this whole thing is that if you go and get yourself an e-tag, because now, now they can email me a blooming infringement notice for this. If you go and get one of those, the way that the e-toll system works is first in, first out. So you will start paying your old debt, which is less than 3 years old now. Okay? And only once you've caught that up will you start catching up the current stuff.
Again, okay. People don't have money. There isn't money, which will force people, good people, to become bad people.
Correct. And you know, this is the whole problem. They haven't thought this through. They really haven't. They think that they're going to be able to stomp their foot down, come with a patriarchal view. You people work for us. Mm-hmm. You're our minions. Mm-hmm. Okay. We are not public servants. You are servants of the government. And that is what is so wrong with this type of thinking that has been inculcated in the ruling party, who think that they are above everybody else.
Yep.
When last did you drive on a freeway and not have a whole lot of black BMWs and Mercs with blue flashing lights come push you off the road?
Yeah, they think
because they're in a hurry.
Yeah. So, Cliff, what about the other things that you wanted to cover? We haven't got a huge amount of time, but Howard's really brought this Arto Act into very stark contrast for us.
I think that's actually the exact reason why I brought him on board. Hearing about this when he
told
me
you
this
two
in
talk?
Confidence. pretty every now and then. We'll get together and have like a 4-hour coffee session. And then when he told me this, my jaw literally hit the floor. It's like, people need to be aware.
I just want to refer to one other thing, because we always have the most hideous, horrendous Easter death tolls on our roads. And government has been completely useless in trying to curb this. It has to do with, and I'm always interested that so many of these deaths are pedestrian deaths, which is something that doesn't come up that often. Are there any plans afoot besides the Arto Act to try to do anything about this? Because obviously there are innocent people losing their lives.
Well, first off, the Arto Act is not about road safety.
No.
But, you know, we road safety is a process, not an event. And unfortunately, if you don't drum this into people on a daily basis, 24/7, then you cannot expect them to behave themselves at Easter and at Christmas and the like. The fact is that we're going to see another set of utter carnage on our roads come the Easter season. I'm sorry to say it, because our government keeps on trying the same things and expecting different results. And the fact is that what we need is, number one, we need to start educating people correctly. Tell me something. When you were at school, what were you taught to do before crossing a road? Look
left and right.
Oh, is it? Okay. Do you live in America?
No.
If you look left, right, left, you're going to get killed. Let me tell you why.
Right, left, right.
Because we drive on the left-hand side of the road, and that comes from America. They are still teaching children that today. And that is why I say we need to fix what is so severely broken in this country. When you come to a roundabout or traffic circle, did you know that they're two different types?
Yes.
I didn't.
You
I
know did, that you because got, I told you, schmuck.
You got to give way to traffic from the right.
No.
Only on big circles. Only like in Valcourt. No.
So, big circles.
So what
a big circle?
So what about a little one?
It depends on the sign. If there is a sign there which is blue with little white arrows in it, then it's a roundabout and you give priority to traffic approaching from the road on the right.
Mm-hmm.
If it has an upside or an
inverted.
A yield sign,
yes,
okay, with a little circle in it, then it's a first come first serve basis. So it's basically a 2 or 3 or 4 way yield. It's just ridiculous. Why we have to complicate things in this manner, I don't know. If I was to write traffic laws, I'd make them real easy, and I'd make you learn each and every single one of them. And I'll tell you why. That's what you have to do in the UK. That's why their road fatalities are so darn low. Because when you go for your learner's test, if you don't know all of those rules of road, you're going to fail. Okay? So there's a lot of things that need to be done. Legislation needs to be changed. This challenge that I've brought against the ARTA Act as it stands right now is a very serious one. And I want folk to start getting behind me because, you know, it's all very well that, let's allude to a question that my dear friend Cliff actually asked me.
Mm-hmm.
He said to me, well, what is it that you actually do? Okay. Well, let's see.
Besides from being a model citizen, obviously.
From 2010 to 2012, JMPD was issuing illegal traffic fines. So off goes Dembowski and he starts stirring a bit of trouble about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Net result, 4 billion rands worth of traffic fines were cancelled. Outstanding traffic fines.
Thank you, Howard.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it puts the food in my mouth. Do. I actually appreciate it.
How can we support you, though?
Let me just finish that and then I'll tell you how. Okay. In my latest constitutional challenge, I said they need to cancel stagnated traffic fines. Well, guess what? They said, no, we're not going to do that. And then they cancelled 20 million fines to the value of 9.5 billion rand. So that's what's happened.
Thanks.
Now, guys, yes, I need to start bringing in some money because I've got council I have to pay.
Right.
And trust me, these guys aren't cheap. Okay. So we'll be announcing, and I'll do it through you guys if I can.
Sure, of course.
Okay. A fund that we're putting together to fight this properly because the Auto Amendment Bill, if it's signed into law, has to be challenged within 24 to 36 hours. Absolutely. We've got to have it in the High Court, interdict this thing, and stop it because you cannot allow this to go through because if it does go through, what's going to stop government from bringing in the administrative adjudication of crimes that police don't want to investigate act.
Which means that they basically have, it's a police state.
Correct. Yeah. So in other words, if I say that you slap me across the face, you're guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have to either prove yourself innocent or take the rap for it. That is the kind of nonsense that can come about from this.
All right, Howard, you have, again, you've made us terrified of everything. But
pass me my purse. I need to pay now.
But this is important, and if there's a place that you should be putting your money in order to help fight this stuff, it's to challenge constitutionally these things which will otherwise make you bankrupt anyway. They've already pretty much reduced the state to the point of being a bully. Where they're going to come and shake things at you and make your life uncomfortable and horrible. So we're going to move on, but thank you very much to Pig Spotter.
Thank you.
Cliff, it's good to see you. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We'll do this again, and we'll have more on road safety, more on your rights, more on insurance, more on how it all works, all of that coming up. This is Smart Driving with Pig Spotter. CliffCentral.com, 9 minutes after 7.
This is CliffCentral.com.